Decisions That Matter is brought to you by Procurated. For a limited time, Procurated will donate $5 to NIGP's membership scholarship for every supplier review that our listeners write on Procurated.com. So visit the site today and share your experience working with local suppliers to help fund NIGP memberships for at-risk members. Hope you enjoy this episode and have a great day. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast. I'm your host, Alex Stonehouse, and today with me is my co-host, Bernadette Lowney. We're also joined today by one of Procurated's newest employees, who we're really happy to have on board, Mike Durr. So I'm going to kick it over to Mike. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about what got you into the public space, the public sector, and how you've sort of advanced throughout your career to where you are now?
Sure, be happy to. You know, like I always tell everybody, I didn't choose procurement. It kind of chose me. It wasn't a field I was looking to go into or had no idea what procurement was. But I came to realize quickly in my career that we do procurement in everyday part of our lives. And it wasn't new to me. It was just something new entering the public field. Spent 21 years in public procurement as the public procurement officer for the County of Monterey. And as procurement officers, you know, we're not just procurement. We get into a little bit of everything. We touch everything our organizations do. I had the pleasure during my stint with Monterey County to actually not only be their CPO, but I spent a time as their fleet business manager, overseeing fleet operations with 38 mechanics, light side and heavy shop. When we call light side is your normal sedans, day-to-day vehicles, and the heavy equipment, which is the road equipment. Also oversaw three fuel management sites with Monterey County, which was an exciting time in my life. I got to learn a little bit more about the fleet operations of a public agency, even though prior to joining Monterey County, I did run a fleet service station for the Naval Postgraduate School Navy PX system, which was more of your retail side of a shop plus a repair bay shop, which had 7 bays and 8 mechanics. A little different from a retail side, going to the public sector and really just serving the internal customer. It was an exciting point in my time and my career. Also spent time as the county's records retention manager, surplus manager, and the printing services mail operations manager for Monterey County. Oversaw 2 food operations and a daycare center. So, you know, as procurement officials, we're not just doing procurement, we're doing a little bit of everything.
That's awesome. Sounds like you really were able to touch everything from fuel and vehicles to daycare. That's great. So what we are super excited to talk to you about today is specifically that experience managing fleet in Monterey County. But I know from our previous discussions, one of the really big accomplishments you had there was just restructuring how that fleet division operated, and that you were able to create just like a really big impact, have a lot of cost savings. And we would love just to talk to you about that today. So where do you want to get started? Is it good to kind of tell us what it looked like before the restructuring? We can kind of go from there.
Yeah, let's do that. That's probably a good starting point. One of the first things that I did going in as a fleet business manager was to really sit down and understand the current structure, the current operation. One of the things I did is I sat down and met with my lead supervisors. They were broken out into 2 shops, basically what they call the heavy side and the light side. Heavy side was the heavy equipment, road equipment for public works, school buses, fire engines, and those types of equipment. The light side was the day-to-day sedans, pickups, emergency service, sheriff's vehicles, patrol, pursuit vehicles. And then we had our parts room kind of in the middle of this 2 groups. And then we had our fuel management sites. What I did is I sat down with all of my leads first on a one-on-one basis and got their feedback, their input. Hey, what was currently working within the operations? What was it? And what would they like to see changed if they were made the king for the day and had the authority to come in and just make sweeping changes to the organization? I then sat down with my parts room staff, my fuel management team, and then my actual line staff, the mechanics, the ones that were actually in the trenches doing the work. And I wanted to see if what was given to me by my lead supervisors and managers was exactly what was the same thought and idea and mission focus as the line staff. Come to find out, there was mixed communication and they weren't operating on the same page. One of the things I identified out of those meetings was that we were operating on old technology, old data, and old systems. So one of the things I did is I sat down with, I put together a team of stakeholders out of my managers and my line staff, and we sat down and created some targets as to what we wanted to see improved within fleet operations. And the first goal we had to come up with was a revised mission. What was our statement to our customers? And what we came up with was we wanted our customers to come to us because they wanted to come, not because they were mandated by policies and procedures within the organization. And in order to do that, we had to make sure that we were providing top-notch customer service. And we couldn't do that with our current systems in place. So the first thing that I tackled was upgrading our fleet management system, the entire system that managed our workload from the time a customer dropped their vehicle off, the interactions they had with the front desk, the service desk, all the way to the finished product of their vehicle being returned to them. I went in and we evaluated and we went out to bid for a new fleet management system. That system alone improved our overall production rate and reduced wasted time between mechanics submitting part orders and waiting for parts to come back. We were able to evaluate what was being done prior to the system and what our measurements of performance was after the implementation of the system. Huge increase, huge improvement. As always with new systems, you're always going to have staff that push back. They don't want change. Change is hard. So we made sure that we spent a lot of time in change management communication to line staff of what the system was going to do for them and what improvements they would see. So that was the first big change that we made in fleet operations.
Is the fleet management software, like where it's at today, is it sophisticated enough that it's sort of dialed into the cars themselves where you know where all the cars in the fleet are, what mileage they have, what level their gas tank is at, all that kind of, is it that sophisticated? Or is it more of a tool like where it really matters what the input is coming from the users? Like it's only as good as the user input.
So the one we put in place was very sophisticated. We actually are able to track analytics of each vehicle. And what I mean by that is miles driven, operational period, speed limits associated with, was there speeding involved, repairs, needed repairs. So the system actually updates and reports, not just to the in-house service rider, but to the users of those vehicles. Email communication can be automatically sent to them, reminding them, hey, your service is due for its A schedule maintenance, which is a oil change, or a B level service, which could be a higher level of a tire change, rotation, oil checks, transmission checks, all the way up to a C level, which is a full-blown, you know, after 45,000 mile check. The system can automatically communicate to the users that's required, which saved us a lot of time of manually having to go through paper files of records of, okay, where's this vehicle in its maintenance period? So the system is capable of doing that, and we did that. We were able to track our assets at any given time, where they were on a map. One of the things that the system did not do was track fuel consumption. So what we looked at was when we placed the system in, we wanted to ensure that there was a connectivity level there that if we brought in a third-party system, say a fuel management system, which I did at the same time, that the crosswalks were there for data interchange and communication. So when we put the fleet management system in, shortly after, within 2 months, we put a new fuel management system in, which allowed us to track consumption, performance, miles, usage, based off the vehicle driving into one of the fuel sites. It would automatically, the system would automatically read all that required data that we required or requested to be on a report for a user department. So the systems are as sophisticated as you allow them to be, and as much effort you put into it. And so one of the things we identified was that we needed to up our game in our technology department with regards to our assigned technology IT staff with regards to our systems.
I love what you mentioned too about the change management aspects of bringing a new software on, and that it's always hard, whether it's Fleet or a CRM or the sales technology. Do you have any tips for how a Fleet leader or any kind of leader can navigate that change management, and maybe any lessons that you learned from doing it at Monterey County?
Yeah, you know, change management's a big one, no matter what system change you're doing. What I learned early on was I had to really learn and understand my staff, my team, you know, understanding their levels of how comfortable are they with a system change? How comfortable are they with technology, the use of technology? I had a variety of staff and ages. I had some that were really savvy on technology, where they wanted the iPad so they could take that iPad, walk over to the vehicle, have that iPad diagnose the system of the car using that iPad and not having to take paper notes and then going back and sitting at a computer at a desk, typing in their notes, requesting parts. I had to really understand how comfortable my team was at what levels each member was, so that when we started implementing the change, I knew exactly what level of training each team member was going to require or need in order to make the implementation successful. It only takes a few of your team members to really have a bad outcome or interaction with the system implementation to really have your implementation go south quickly, especially if they've been there for a long time and they're senior in staff. They have a lot of standing with other staff members. So just communicating the process all the way through, making sure that we had the appropriate number of stakeholder meetings, training meetings, and opportunities for staff to come in and play with the system. So what one of the requirements during our implementation was that the selected vendor had to bring in and set up, stand up an actual system where staff can come into a training room and play with every gadget, every button, every tool that was going to be used on this system was connected to a training system where they could actually play, whether it was the iPads that they're going to walk around with in the shop, or it was going to be the actual scanning tools, or was it going to be in the parts room, supervisory staff, timesheets, how we were going to be implementing work orders. All of that had to be set up and be able to be touched by the staff.
That is awesome. That's really, really, really cool. So that was something that you included in the bid?
That was included in our RFP when we went out to bid, and it was a requirement of the selected vendor. And we knew there might have been a cost increase, which was fine, because I was willing to pay a little more upfront for that additional training and on hands, just to make sure that I had a successful implementation of a system.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, I think, just across any industry almost, of committing to a software, is you don't really know if it's the right fit for you for the first couple months. So having that kind of buffer zone where people can try it out, ease into it, have people help them with it is really clutch.
And I think our job is, as fleet managers, whether you're a manager or a business manager or just a supervisor within fleet operations, you know, our job is to make sure that our team is successful in whatever tools we give them to do their job. So if they're not using the tools fully to the level that those tools are meant to be used, then we're failing as leaders to give them the opportunity to be successful. Because if they're not successful, I'm not successful, and neither is my organization. And you know, when it comes to getting emergency vehicles serviced in and out, because we gave priority to, one, our pursuit vehicles, our law enforcement vehicles, then to our public works vehicles, because they had to be up and running in case of the disaster, and then school buses. Those were the vehicles that had priority. And if we weren't doing our job properly in getting those vehicles in, getting the initial analysis done on the vehicle of what needed to be serviced, getting that part order in, finding that part, getting that part delivered, getting the vehicle fixed and out the door in a timely manner, then we weren't doing justice to our customers or to our reputation as a top-notch fleet management organization.
Absolutely. So this moving over to a new fleet management software and fuel software was step one, I think you said, of kind of the overhaul. Let's kind of move into step two. So what did you guys do next after the new software was onboarded?
So once the new software was on board, the fleet management and the fuel management system, the next thing I had to look at was the in-house tools. And what I mean by that was the mechanics tools. What did they have in their shop drawers? You know, what was available to them in the parts checkout room? How current was our equipment, whether it was the smog machine or was it the tire rotation or alignment machine? How current was all of that equipment and was it safe for my teams to use? So that's the next thing we did was we sat down. I sat down with each leader, each supervisor from each department, whether it was the heavy side, light side, or parts or fuel. We sat down and we talked about the needs of those divisions within fleet. We identified them, then we prioritized them in the order of priority, and understanding that with our fleet operations, we were a non-general fund contribution supported. We were making our own funding. We were an ISF, in an internal support fund. So we had to create our own funding to support everything we did. That was labor, cost, parts, and also any capital improvements that we were looking for going forward. We had to fund that ourselves. So we sat down, we identified those areas that needed to be improved, what we could afford in year one, all the way through year five. So I had put together a five-year plan as to what we needed to improve and how quickly we needed to improve it. I was happy to say that we actually exceeded that and got everything done in 3.5 years.
If you don't mind me asking, you guys provided your own funding. What does that look like and how does your team do that?
So our own funding means that we have to generate our own source of income from vehicle repairs, whether it's vehicle repairs, fuel sales, or any other type of point of sale that we have. For example, we had a car wash, an internal car wash that was being utilized by departments, but there was no funding to support it. So we had to go to an in-house charge. So every time a department vehicle went through that car wash, based on our new fleet system, they were able to run through the system, would scan the vehicle and then charge that department $3.50 for that car wash. We increased it a little bit so that we were making sure that we were creating our own internal revenue. So our revenue that created had to support our operations. There was no general fund contribution coming from the county to support our operation. So we had to be self-sufficient.
That makes sense. So that not 100% of the cost is being put on the fleet division. It's spread across all the agencies that are taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
One question that I did have, when you're talking about the kind of the priority of having the like police and emergency vehicles being first, and then things like school buses also being a top priority, when you're purchasing those, do you have kind of a similar rubric that you use for everything where it's like, it just has to meet the specs that we get from the agency or the department, and then it has to meet a certain price point? Or is it for police cars, it has to have like a certain performance metrics that you're hitting, and then for a school bus, it might be safety is the top priority or something? How standardized is that, or how like specialized do you get once you start breaking down vehicle types and different agencies?
You know, that's a good question. Because when I first took over fleet, that was the question I asked. Yeah. You know, where's our standards? What are our standards for purchasing vehicles, whether it be a pursuit vehicle, you know, a public works vehicle, or a school bus? What are the requirements? What are our specifications for purchasing these items? Are we making those up, or are we working with the user department to identify what's important to them? One of the first things I did sitting down as well was saw the need that in order to control cost in my operations, we needed to standardize how we were purchasing vehicles for Monterey County. And what I mean by that is that when I first came in, we had probably 6, maybe 7 manufacturers types of vehicles within our operations, which, you know, isn't bad for a county our size. But when we looked at our light side vehicles, for example, our day-to-day sedans and pickup trucks, we had six or seven different types of manufacturers, which then required me to carry more parts in my parts house. Not every one of those vehicles came in for maintenance in a routine fashion. That was one of my battles, was getting vehicles in for servicing. So I said, okay, let's look at how do we standardize and reduce our parts costs, my labor cost in ordering parts, and dead stock on the shelf. So we sat down and we standardized what we were going to do in Monterey County when it came to vehicles. We looked over all of the specifications and requirements of what was necessary, for example, for our pursuit vehicles. What did our sheriff demand? What did my public works director require? What was required for school buses? And then also other types of vehicles. So I sat down, we looked at it, and we said, okay, we need to standardize what we're doing here. So fleet management actually took control and came up with a specification sheet for each type of vehicle that was going to be allowed to be purchased and placed in the Monterey County fleet. That then helped reduce our overall cost in shelving parts, getting parts, trying to find outdated parts because some of our vehicles were so outdated. But it also helped our customer understand the importance of really understanding their specifications when they go out to bid. It really helped us to negotiate better pricing. For example, for our sheriff's department, we worked with them to identify, we were able to go to a certain manufacturer for all of their pursuit vehicles, which greatly reduced their overall cost in the long term. Within the first year, I believe they realized a 22 or 23% reduction in cost. Over the five-year period, they were able to realize a reduction of over 52% in cost because they were relying on one manufacturer now to provide their vehicles and parts, which we were then able to leverage our negotiating ability on pricing, not just on vehicles, but on parts as well, which really reduced their overall costs in-house for that department.
Yeah, I feel like that can't be overstated. Even if you're buying the same amount of parts, the fact that they're all the same parts really does make a difference.
One of the other things we were able to do, especially with our law enforcement vehicles, when I first came into fleet, they were buying off the cooperative agreements and buying from out-of-state agencies or dealerships that were part of the cooperatives. One of the things they didn't realize was that when they were buying those vehicles off those cooperatives, in some cases, there was a cost to use that cooperative. And in other cases, there was a cost to upgrade that vehicle to the California smog requirement in order for that vehicle to get passed in California, plus the transportation cost. What we were able to do is take their specifications, put them out to bid, but also to our local dealerships. Mm-hmm. And we were actually able to swing that to where our local dealerships were more competitive than those other outside manufacturers or dealerships outside of the state of California. So, you know, just understanding your customers' needs and sitting down with them and having that open discussion really gives the fleet manager an opportunity to come into the organization and say, hey, we're here to partner with you. We want the best for you. We want to put the best vehicle on the road out there because our name's on it, not just the sheriff's name, but fleet management's name's on that car as well. Because every time we service that vehicle, we want to be able to be assured that when you hit those lights, they work. You hit those brakes, they work. And that that vehicle is stable in every pursuit that you have to incur as a law enforcement agency. Same with public works. When a disaster or a storm hits, we want to make sure that every vehicle you get in, when you turn that key, that tractor, that bulldozer, that dump truck, they all start, because you can't respond to the emergency and help the residents of our county if those vehicles aren't operating. So we took pride in that. And I was proud to say that the entire time that I managed fleet, we had zero incidents of a vehicle not being responsive during the need.
Wow, that's a really powerful statistic. Okay, so we got first step, we got software and the systems in place. Second step, looked internally at the parts within your division and standardized and increased the inventory there. And then step three, what was that next step after the parts?
The next step was really sitting down and looking at the structure of my staff, the team. Was the current structure appropriate for meeting the needs of my customers. And what I mean by that is when I first came in, they had, like I said, they had that heavy side, light side structure. And then they had parts in the middle. It was kind of like you walked into fleet operations and it was fragmented. It was broken. You had the heavy side team that didn't communicate to the light side because they didn't think they had to. And there was two separate supervisors, one overseeing each side, which I saw cause friction and didn't really create that team environment. Plus, there was no crossover. So if I had several mechanics on my light side that were out, nobody from the heavy side was trained to come over to the light side to help out, and vice versa. Most importantly, the heavy side. If I had two of my five mechanics out, that caused a burden on the ability to repair heavy equipment, which takes a lot longer to repair than light vehicles. But I had nobody from the light side that could come over and fulfill those needs and support that area. Same with my fuel management program. If my fuel management team or somebody was out, there was no backup. So one of the first things I identified was my team structure. The categories that they were in, their titles, did the titles appropriately fit those positions? And how could I create an environment of teamwork, continuity, you know, desire, the want to come to work and work as a team? So I sat down with our county HR, my budget director, and said, look, here are some things I need to do. I need to change some titles. I need to change some roles. And there's going to be some fiscal impact on a few of these positions, but this has to be done in order for this organization to continue to move forward, but also to ensure continuity in the time of a disaster or a mass sick out. So we sat down, we identified what that structure was going to look like. What I did is I changed my service rider, who was really not a service rider, kind of sat way in the back of the organization, in the back of the fleet. So customers, when they came in, didn't know where that service rider was. So I had to change also the physical structure of the facility. I hired on a full-time actual service rider position, put that individual right inside the front door. So the first person that the customer saw was the service rider. The service rider now got up out of the chair and actually went outside to meet the customer and to get information from the vehicle themselves, instead of relying on a customer coming in to fill out a little 3-page triplicate document. The service rider got up with their iPad, went out, scanned the car's barcode, the VIN number, and it brought everything up about the car. They didn't have to ask information. They just said, okay, what are you here for? And they would type it on their iPad. The customer would sign, done. We also created a waiting room. One thing in public agencies and fleet departments, they don't treat their customers like actual customers do when you go to a normal dealership. You know, when you take your car, your personal vehicle to a dealership, they have waiting rooms and they treat you well if they want your business. We didn't have anything like that. We required them to stand outside or sit on the curb. So we created a waiting room, an environment where it showed our customers that, hey, we want you to come here, not because you have to, not because you're mandated, but we want you to come here because of our service. So we created a waiting room that was welcoming. Then what we did is we created a two-way communication portal platform on our system, utilizing our new fleet management system, that actually was able to push out repair notifications as to where their vehicle was in the repair line. Where was it? Okay, the vehicle's not on the rack. The system sent them either an email or a text. If they put down their cell phone, it would send them a text. If not, send them an email. Hey, your vehicle's on the rack. Your vehicle's waiting for parts. Your vehicle's complete. You can now pick up your vehicle.
Oh, it's my mechanic.
So it was automated. Yeah, we took away that whole, write it on a piece of paper, Post it on a clipboard, and then hope the service rider was able to identify it. So we automated. So it was just automating, working with what worked best on the staffing.
As you said, those changes, I'm sure it went both ways too. It instilled a lot more confidence in the customer and made them, I'm sure, more willing, excited. It felt easy to come in. And I'm sure there was also a sense of greater pride too within your workforce. They felt like they were doing a really great job. That I'm sure those kind of two things, I would think, probably kind of like fed off of each other and made the experience even better.
Yeah, you know, that is a true fact, because what we did is we went from receiving negative feedback from our customers to positive feedback. I even implemented a survey document that would get hung in every vehicle's mirror once the vehicle was completed for repair and it was on the what we call the pickup line. That card would be hung on the mirror and the customer could fill it out if they want, or they could scan the barcode and actually send back an electronic comment on how we were doing as a fleet operation. We even went as far as offering car washes. When your vehicle came in for repair, if it needed a car wash, you just put on the work order, you wanted a car wash, we would take care of that for you. So we were providing above and beyond what a normal public agency fleet system would do. We were acting more like a outside commercial repair service operation would. We were also offering shuttle services to and from their office location. Also loaner vehicles. We made sure that if they needed a loaner vehicle, if they reserved one ahead of time, we made sure that was available to them. So it's the full turnkey fleet operation program that you have to look at. One of the last things that I implemented before I moved out of fleet to take on other challenges within the county was a fleet reservation system, sort of like an enterprise system. We were able to place a fleet motor pool rental program in our key facilities, some of our larger government structure, whether it was our main government office downtown or our health department, social services locations. We were able to put in reservation systems where we fleet would put the vehicles out there. We serviced them. We made sure they were always full of gas. If a customer needed a rental like Enterprise, they would go on a motor pool fleet system, reserve their vehicle for the time period they needed. It would give them a code. They would go to the box, put the code in, get the key, use the vehicle, drive it, return it. And they had to answer 4 questions: if the vehicle needed repair, did it need washing, did it need fuel, and then how was your overall customer service level with the vehicle. Once they answer those questions, if it needed fuel, a response would go back to Central Fleet. We would get a notification. A fleet person would go out, pick that vehicle up and fill it up. If it needed repair, we take care of it. But that was a system that we put in place that also let departments reduce their overall fleet pool size, where vehicles would normally sit for days in and out, not being used. And if an employee went to use it, the battery is either dead, car wouldn't start, or tire was flat. They were able to reduce those issues, those costs and concerns, and we were able now to provide a new level of service to our customers.
Awesome. After all of that work being done, were there any metrics that you saw in terms of increased usage of the fleet division or anything like that, anything of that nature?
Yeah, one of the challenges that I had to take on when I first stepped into fleet was departments were pushing really hard to use outside repair shops, whether it was for day-to-day repair, oil changes, body work, that type of thing. They were pushing to use outside entities because of the poor level of service they were receiving from fleet operations. And that's one of the main reasons that I was tasked to go in and tackle, was to improve the overall fleet operations and the performance and the customer service satisfaction. We were able to do that it took about 4.5, maybe 5 years to really get to the point where departments actually relied on us. And we were able then, and we were called to the table during budget time to sit down with departments and talk about their overall previous year's experience with fleet, but also their fleet costs. We were brought to the table to talk about how could we help them further reduce fleet costs, whether it was fleet repairs, rentals, leases, or fuel. We were actually brought to the table and we were prepared. At that time, I brought on a new fleet manager who actually was really savvy in the system, was able to run reports. He went prepared to every budget discussion with departments that invited him to come. He was able to show them through a matrix and a dashboard and a spreadsheet of, here's every vehicle you have in your department. Here's the mileage driven for the last year. Here's your high peak points of use of that vehicle. Here's where that vehicle sits for 4 or 5 months, not being used, but you're paying for it. Here's your overall repair costs for those vehicles. And here's how many users within your department were using those vehicles. With that data, we were then able to say, hey, let's change how you purchase your vehicles. Let's go to a vehicle management program instead of a vehicle replacement program, where we manage your vehicles and say, okay, you have 45 vehicles in your system. You're only using 20 of them in a high capacity. Here's where that high capacity is happening in this branch of your department over in this location. You have 30 or 20 something other vehicles sitting at this other branch that aren't being used. Let's rotate those vehicles from one branch to another so that you switch those high vehicles to the low usage areas and vice versa, so that you can better get a longer lifespan out of your vehicles so that you're not having to replace those heavy use vehicles consistently. Let's save some money and let's start managing your vehicle pool instead of just replacing. So that mind thought of, hey, we're going to replace this vehicle in 5 years, no matter what, that went away. And our customers actually started wanting us at the table for discussions. Big difference.
Absolutely. I mean, huge difference. And it's a testament to you guys. But even more than that, increased usage, yes, but being a strategic partner and being invited in those conversations is the highest compliment of all, in my opinion. I think it, unless there is anything else that we're missing here, Mike, I think this has been a really great look at what it takes to completely restructure a fleet division. You did really amazing work, you and your team at Monterey County, and thank you so much for sharing it with us. Anything else you want to add to wrap us up at the end?
No, I would just say, you know, thank you for the opportunity. And, you know, and I would say, as anybody going into a new fleet area, or if you're an existing fleet manager, being in tune and open with your staff and your team, making your team successful will make you successful as a fleet manager, and it makes it more fun.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.